Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name is Cosmo. Tonight I'm joined by Eddie in, it must be said, very sultry lighting. I think you've outdone yourself today.
It's back. Formal and not so sexy, but I have to bring it back.
We've got a sexy AR today, and we got Glenn.
Just Glenn. No sexy Glenn.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they're lighting it. I mean, when you got Eddie coming in a completely red lit room. And then you're just looking like a true Spurs fan, to be fair, with the Spurs posters behind you. Yeah, let me not say too much, because actually saying looking like a true Spurs fan could be taken offensively as well. If you had a look at the Enoch Out protest, then did you guys see that with the rabbi?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Glenn, you weren't there with the pitchforks.
No.
Interesting vibes.
I think when you got the rabbi leading the protest, it's never really a good look, is it?
I have a workmate. She just like moved to London recently. She was at Cambridge doing at uni, but now she lives in London, and she's Jewish. And so she's like, I swear, like Tottenham are like the Jewish club of the Premier League. I was just like, I'll just say don't support a football team if that's
gonna save her from the pain.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were going to say like you introduced her to the idea of the rabbi.
No.
You just started sending pictures of this like 60-year-old bloke, half-naked bloke with a hat on. Oh, man. He is class, to be fair. Right, Brighton. Glenn, you were absolutely pained by this game. I wasn't so much. So I feel like maybe being in the stadium took away a bit, especially with the VAR controversies and whatnot, given the fact that when you're in the stadium, you have no idea what's going on with the VAR. But one thing which I think kind of, it was a case of one thing leading to another. I think everything started from De Zerbi's handshake or lack thereof with Stellini, and then the finger jabbing and whatnot. So I just wanted to get your views on what you guys made of De Zerbi's conduct and whether it's put you off him at all, because I feel like you kind of need a thick skin to manage Tottenham with the amount of banter we get, and taking that much offence to kind of inoffensive comment from Stellini, it's a little bit worrying, and I don't think it helped him in terms of the decisions. Glenn, what do you think?
Yeah, I just think having looked into it a bit now, like I saw what happened before the game when I was at the game, and I saw what happened during the game, and just his conduct throughout the game was really strange. He was almost every single action he was taking was some sort of jibe towards the Spurs bench or Stellini before he got sent off. And looking into it a bit more, like, his conduct in matches this season has been terrible. He's got two red cards and he's got four yellow cards. That's got to be like a record for the worst conduct of a Premier League manager in a season of all time, because that's really bad. I think you see maybe one yellow card every three weekends, and for him to be doing that, like himself, like one yellow card / red card every three games is terrible. Like, it's really worrying for those who actually think that he could be the Spurs manager, and it's something that I think Daniel Levy especially will look very badly upon, having just sacked a manager who was very emotional in a post-match press conference and scolded his own team. Like, I think it's a little bit worrying to see a manager that's as emotional as De Zerbi was this weekend on the sort of like the list of managers that you want to hire.
So is that you on the Ange train then, Glenn?
No. Having said that, it was a tactical masterclass, despite the fact that they lost.
Yeah, that's true. Eddie, I was going to come to you. Do you think anything to do with De Zerbi's conduct? Do you think there was anything to do with him being linked with the Spurs job?
I, to tell you the truth, I don't know. Do you guys actually know why he was upset at the beginning of the game?
Yeah. So there was a misquote in an Italian newspaper or some sort of article, Italian article, that said that Stellini said that De Zerbi was winning on the back of all of Potter's work was the direct translation from Italian. However, what Stellini had actually said was that De Zerbi had taken Potter's team to another level.
Yeah,
which is exactly what he said in English, in the press conference in the embargoed section, as reported by Alistair Gold and other Spurs journalists, having been mistranslated / misquoted by, I think it's Gazzetta. I think that's
where it was
published. De Zerbi's read the headline of that and just gone nuts with it.
Fair. I do think, so like initially I was like very upset by it and kind of put off by the it on top of just like his record, because he's not been in the Premier League for that long. And to have that kind of record already does say something potentially about how managers conduct themselves, potentially about how referees manage games. I just think that, yeah, like Cosmo said, you do kind of need a little bit of a fire in your belly and a little bit of like a thick skin to manage something like Spurs, but you can't really allow it to boil over. And for me, if it's at the opposition, at other managers, I would much prefer that than at our own players, which is what we had. And I've never got the feeling that De Zerbi is going to personally hang, draw, and quarter his own squad in a press conference. So, yeah, initially I was like, kind of like, this is not the type of manager that I want at Tottenham. But again, it comes to the age old adage of like, we're too nice. And maybe the fact that we're looking at this and being like, oh, I don't want this in my club, it's just like another indication that maybe we're not ready for like someone to win at all costs. We had that in Mourinho, although kind of he became not so much that kind of manager, more of a grating influence. And then you have Conte, whose attitude was just, it began to stink essentially. So yeah, I don't know. It was confusing. And clearly it was just a miscommunication. But I think there's also that language barrier, which will improve as well. And so I think the more time he spends in England, I think you'll find the less that happens.
Yeah. It did feel a bit like it was a them against us attitude. And it kind of reminded me of like the days where, like, not towards the end of the Jose days, but like that middle period where it was like, Jose like made it Jose, Spurs and the team like against everyone, against the world. It was like, it felt like that, and that's the Jose that I loved at Spurs. So it could be taken that way, in fairness. Like, a lot of it was against the referee who had made some awful decisions, not just the ones that have been highlighted on replays, but elsewhere in the game as well, and against the opposition. So it wasn't sort of towards his team. It felt like a bit of a them against us sort of attitude, which could be seen as a positive. I don't know. Not personally, but maybe some people have seen it that way.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, not about the Jose us against the world attitude, but I was thinking when, you know, a lot of journalists were saying like this might put Levy off and whatnot, and his conduct might actually put like Spurs fans off. But the thing is, it did kind of, when I started thinking about it a bit more, I was like, it kind of reminded me of when Dyer came out right at the start of the Pochettino era, I think in the second season. And he was like, a lot of people being the same things about us and we don't like it and we want to change the perception of Spurs. And I think on the one hand, I do understand when people are saying that, like, we don't want a manager who's going to be so spiky that all the banter stuff about Spurs is going to get under his skin. But on the other hand, it could be good to have someone who's just like, look, the whole media are saying we never win trophies, all this stuff. Well, yeah, we've got a problem with that. And we are going to try and change those narratives. That being said, I think, to be completely honest, I wasn't very impressed with his conduct, and I was I was pretty much just calling him a C next Tuesday in the chat the whole time. So I wasn't very happy with it, and it was just a bit weird, to be honest. And I don't think we will get onto the refereeing decisions, but I don't think it actually helped. I think, you know, when you come out like that and you're straight away starting a fight at the beginning of the match, you know, Glenn, you were a referee, you've played a lot of Sunday League football. It's got to be a kind of give and take with the ref. You can't just come out just on absolute smoke. You got to kind of, you know, be a bit nice to them at times as well. You can't just come out and just start like fighting straight away. So, yeah, just not for me. And I think on top of like all the comments that he's made, not comments that he's made, but like the kind of rumblings about him rather staying at Brighton, it doesn't really impress me. I think if you've got the opportunity to move to Spurs from Brighton, you've got to take that, which any Brighton fans would probably be, well, they're not going to be listening to this, let's be honest, but they would be fuming about that because they're trying to force another rivalry. There's another random team trying to force a rivalry with Spurs. It is based entirely off refereeing decisions. I'll just give my take on it and you guys go from there. But I think the Mitoma handball, I've seen people say it's similar to the Sissoko Champions League decision. I think if he doesn't extend his arm behind his body, he's not going to control the ball. So for me, that was a blatant handball. The McAllister one I thought was a little bit harsh, to be honest, because I don't think there's much he could have done. I think his arm was within the kind of like confines of his body. So it's a little bit like ball to hand for me. But the Højbjerg pen, I've seen people say, if you say this isn't a pen, then you're just a completely biased Spurs fan. But I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've seen enough decisions like that go against us where the referee will literally, they'll just say, okay, VAR check over. The amount of times that's happened this season, I've got no sympathy. I'm not saying it's not a penalty, but I've got no sympathy, and I don't understand why it's caused a media witch hunt against Spurs, where apparently we get all the decisions when it almost feels like on a weekly basis we get something like that. Where was the media witch hunt when Ben Mee did that to Kane? That's just a blatant one that's been brought up on Twitter. But I swear to God, there'll be stuff like that almost every week where we don't get a penalty for that. So I just find the whole narrative quite strange. You guys were both making faces when I said that, I was talking about the penalty.
It's a penalty.
Yeah. It's a penalty.
It's 100% a penalty.
I was
worried you were going to be like, but it was a penalty.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that we don't get those pens. I don't think.
The problem is,
especially on VAR,
if you're saying it's not a penalty, you're then creating a bit of a straw man to say, why wasn't the Kane one a penalty? They should all be penalties. They should all just be penalties. That one against Mitoma on the weekend was probably the worst VAR decision that I've seen this season. Like, that bad. That's how bad it was. It was that obvious that it wasn't like reckless by Højbjerg. It was just a mistake. And it was just a penalty. Like, it doesn't make any sense for that not to be a penalty. And it's clear and obvious that the referee made a mistake. Which is why I think the Mitoma handball in the first half was actually not overturned. Because I think if that goal's given, it doesn't get overturned.
Yeah.
Like I think that's just,
I think it's just a handball, to be honest.
I think if I'm a Spurs fan, which I am, I'm saying it's handball anyway. But if I'm a Brighton fan, I'm saying, well, it's in the t-shirt line. That's the way the rule's been written. Like, at the moment. However, the linesman gave the handball, so it shouldn't be overturned, and I completely agree with that decision. The handball off McAllister is just the way the law is written. If a goal goes in off of someone's arm, it has to be handball. No matter where that arm is, no matter how it's hit them, no matter how close the ball is to them, it's. I think there was one that was really weird that came off someone's arm that was down by their side after it was like parried out by a keeper in the Premier League this season. I can't remember who it was. And that was disallowed as well. I think that was actually an Arsenal goal that was disallowed. But it's just the way the law is written at the moment. and it has come off his arm, and it's gone straight into the net afterwards. So that has to be handball. The VAR decisions given against Spurs this season, or not overturned for Spurs this season, have been awful. We are the joint most apologised team for...
No, we don't get apologies.
We've had two already this season. Yeah. Us and Everton are the two highest apologised to teams in the Premier League. And Brighton have now joined us on two, but Brighton have had the most decisions given against them.
Well, wasn't there also a penalty shout in the game anyways? There was a handball in the game that wasn't given last week.
Against Everton.
Huh?
Against Everton, yeah.
And no one, it wasn't even
looked at. They don't even mention it, do they?
Yeah, wasn't even looked at. And that's just one decision. Like, his arm was like outstretched. It hit his arm. And it wasn't even mentioned once. So, yeah, the fact that we had some decisions go our way this weekend is going to hurt for anyone apart from Spurs. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that those were good decisions. They were not good decisions. But we have to benefit from those bad decisions at some point. We can't be on the end of bad decisions every single time. Just by law of averages, let alone, like, I don't know, the universe, like the fairness in the universe or karma or whatever. But just by the law of averages, we're going to have decisions go our way at some point. And they did. And I think even the dunk one where Longley was all over him. On another day, that's a pen. But on the same weekend, we had Gabriel basically manhandling Salah in the box, and it's not given. And everyone's screaming about how that's a bad decision as well. So either they're both pens or neither of them are pens. It's like, and the answer is they're both pens.
Yeah.
And the answer to the Højbjerg one was that's a pen. And the answer to the Kane one is that's also a pen. So
I think the PGMOL or the referees or whatever, they've got themselves into a real pickle with the fact that, like, they're saying, oh, we want to be looser with the interpretation. We want to let the game flow. But then yet when there's like a goal or something, they get the law book out and they just become neeks. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, if you're going to do it looser, or you're going to like implement these really strict rules. And that's why I get jarred when I hear stuff like, I know why you're saying it. I know it's the rule, but like the stuff about like the t-shirt line at the end of the day, I know that's the law, but it's just some made up shit. It's just made up shit by a neek. That's all it is. And it's just, it's so against the kind of the spirit of football. It's just nonsense. But anyway, let's get off referee decisions.
Can I just say a few things more about refereeing decisions in the game? Because the referee had a stinker from the first minute.
Yeah.
Caicedo committed three fouls in the first 5 minutes of the game, got spoken to, made a foul 2 minutes later, and he wasn't booked. Like, and then there's the sending off of Stellini, which is crazy. Yeah. Like, again, they bring out this like this law book thing where if he's not in control of his staff, he's the one to be sent off. The geezer was literally 20 meters away from what was happening.
He was trying to
shout at Eric Dier for defensive and tactical mistakes that he was making. Like, how can you send him off? It makes, like, the Zerbi was in the mix, like, pushing people, like, pointing fingers, coming into our technical area at one point, like, throughout the game. Like, it completely makes sense for him to be red carded. Stellini's just standing there innocent. Like, of course he's doing it on purpose to show the referee that he's not involved. But why is he sent off? Makes no sense.
His face when he was sent off was just what a picture. Literally. I think the ref did it just purely because he didn't want to be seen as being biased towards Spurs anymore. I think he just did that to cover himself. And I think that's also the reason why Stellini actually will get a touchline ban, because they can't not give De Zerbi a touchline ban. And I feel like
I think they will also implement have reviewed the footage Stellini. Already and they're banning the people who were like actually involved in it.
De Zerbi or not?
De Zerbi will get a touchdown ban.
Good.
And some of his staff.
That's another media storm waiting to come, by the way.
There's one of our staff that's quite heavily involved. Let's put it that way. And I don't think.
I don't think
he'll be appearing on the touchline anytime soon.
Didn't he like slap someone in the back of the head or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that on Ali Gold's video.
I just think he's a bit of a farce, though. Like, being like kind of dragged into that. I do understand that it's a game of emotion, but like being dragged into that, like completely kind of makes a mockery of the whole game a bit, because this is clearly a really important game for both teams. And then what you're left with is a game where, and I'm sure we'll go on to it, we were horrible. We were absolutely horrible on the pitch. Tactically, we were horrible. On the ball, we were horrible. And then off the pitch, we were also horrible. And then so what you get is a result which is positive, but everything surrounding it is negative. And I don't know where that leaves us, because we can't have 8 more of these or 7 more of these. It's just going to absolutely whittle us down to our, I don't even know what. Like, we will just be so exhausted by the end of the season. And so I think, We'll leave this for the second half. But it just goes to show, like, there just seems to be such a big disconnect amongst the whole squad about like the direction that we're going in. And in a sense, you know, Stellini keeping, you know, becoming the meme of the week by like standing away from the dumpster fire is almost a metaphor for what's going on with Tottenham. You can't separate Stellini from what's going on the touchline, because he's the manager and he's meant to control his bench. In the same way, you can't separate this result from the context of the game and the season. It's a good result against a team that we're fighting against for European spots, but it was a bad performance and like indicative of like a lot of the problems that we've had this season. And this is essentially our best team. This is the only team that we can realistically play for the rest of the season, with our injuries, with the form of players. And maybe, I don't know, someone like Dan Juma can figure more frequently. That'll be potentially the only difference. But even players like Lucas, I never want to see him again. I don't want to see him like step up, but, you know, ever play for Spurs again. Pat Sarr, I think he's a good talent, but I don't fancy him somewhat in these games, the high pressure games. I don't know what it is. I just think that Skip and Højbjerg have at least got some kind of chemistry and some kind of, they played together enough. And so I don't even know, Glenn, you said coming out of that game, it's like you can't be bothered to watch that muck every week. It's horrible. Yeah. So I don't know.
I completely agree with everything you've said there, Eddie. You can't really separate. Well, you kind of have to separate in a way, completely going with your point, but in a different way. You have to separate the 3-point result that we got to the performance, because you can't separate the performance from the way we've been playing recently. It looked as though throughout the game, like even looking off the ball, like the way Brighton had set up and the way that they like sort of put a lot of their players out wide and left a massive space in the middle of the park, that they were getting all their own way, and we were getting the ball and panicking and hoofing it basically at points, and it was really worrying. Like, aside from all the VAR mistakes, it felt as though for 85 minutes of the game, Brighton got exactly what they wanted. And that was what really worried me, because the likes of Solly March, who's played in the Championship for 5 years, and the likes of Lewis Dunk and these players that shouldn't be anywhere near battering our team off the park. Players like Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son, Højbjerg, who's like played for Denmark and captain Denmark, and Hugo Lloris looking like a fish out of water again. Like, their squad shouldn't put a finger to our squad on paper. Yet the game set like had told a completely different story.
Right. Let's go to a little break for part two, because I think we're running out of time on the Zoom. But yeah, we'll continue that point over there. All right. So we're talking off air there a little bit. And Glenn, you were saying it was one of the most interesting tactical battles that you've seen. And I had to ask, what was that all from Brighton? Because for me, I don't know, you kind of negated the point that I was going to say a little bit, where I just think we look like a team without a manager. I just think this team has, it's like that drawing of the horse where it's like really crap at the back and then it's like really good at the front. Because our defence is an absolute clown show. I think the remnants of Conte's system is just like the fall of Rome, man. That whole like passing between Longley, Lloris, Dier and Romero is just like, I don't even get it. It's like a complete high wire act which has no actual purpose, because all that it leads to is just them just booting it out. So why don't you just boot it out straight away? Why are you playing it on your goal line? So I don't get that at all. So yeah, that's the shitty part of the horse. I think Skip and Højbjerg, I said it last week, I hate the two in midfield. I think it's dreadful. I also, this could open up a bit of a can of worms, but I'm starting to think Skip is just not really good enough. Personally, I think we need to upgrade. Højbjerg as well, that's long running. But I have to say, and this is where I took some hope from the game, definitely more hope than you, Glenn, is that the attack was looking a lot better. I thought, especially on the break. And I think, to me, it just looks like a bunch of blokes at playing like Sunday League, because I just don't think there is any tactics. The tactics is just get it to Kalou, Son and Kane, and just run forward and just everyone try and rush into the box and get on the end of one of the counters. There's no real tactics apart from that, in my opinion. But yeah, what did you guys make of it?
Glenn, do you want to go first?
No, you can. It's all right.
I think that Tottenham at the moment are suffering because in every key position that we have, we have someone who is less than. So in you know, between the sticks, Lloris, it's not good enough to play out from the back. So we're already struggling there. Dier and Longley, it's just not good enough to play out the back. So when we do this kind of three-man clown show, when we're trying to build from the back, it just looks like an absolute car crash. Perisic, just not good enough. Too old, too bereft of ideas. Clearly a wing back. Like, there's no other position that I can see him in on the pitch. But he's just not good enough. He's not at that level anymore. And then you have the two in midfield. If you're going to play in two in midfield, you're going to need someone of Bentancur's quality, someone of Basuma's quality. I'm in between Cosmo and Glenn on the Skip debate. I think Skip is good, not great. I think Højbjerg is bad. And so if you have like a good midfielder and a bad midfielder, and neither of them are great, and you're playing in a midfield two, and you're playing against common really interesting talents like Caicedo, you're just going to get eaten up, especially when they've got like an actual clear kind of tactical arrangement in that midfield. And then you have the front three, which obviously has been misfiring this season, but has the quality to win you games. Obviously, one of our goals is one of the best goals I've seen all season from Spurs. So that just goes to show, like, it wasn't even kind of like a good tactical move. It was just Son on the edge of the box, where he hasn't been this season, which maybe is kind of an indication that that kind of slight tweak means that we may get some of that more going forward. But it was just a situation where Son, you know, struck the ball well, but that goes in maybe two out of 10 times, one out of 10 times. And then you, yeah, I just think that when you go through the whole team, there just isn't players good enough in order to play that kind of tactical game. The wing back's not good enough. Although Porro, as his movement is, you know, he's like strength to strength. I think we will see the best of him yet. But it's kind of nice to see someone with a bit of quality. And it's like when he does get up there, he does show quality. Like, although it's not like perfect every time, it's better than having nothing from that right hand side, which we've had for so long, whether it be Doherty or Emerson. So, but then if, yeah, if you want to have two midfield, you have to have better players than Højbjerg and Skip. If you want to play out the back, you have to have better players than Lloris and Longley and Dier. If you want to play with wingbacks, you have to have better players than Perisic. And that's it. That's like seven players out of your team, six players out of your team. And so that's why I think we look so tactically bereft, because we don't have the, we do not have the capacity to play in that tactical style. They're not tenacious enough in midfield. They're not good enough at recycling the ball in midfield. They're not comfortable enough in defence to bring the ball out of defence. And I think one of the things that I think is specific with Tottenham is that our three centre-backs are so narrow, so narrow. So whenever they pick up the ball, they're only about 7 yards away from each other, which means that you're not passing it into space. You're not passing it into a place where a player can move. You're essentially passing it into a place where you'd have run into anyways. And so it means that you're not progressing the ball. That's something specifically that I assume with Spurs. And then with Højbjerg and Skip, they're both just occupying the same spaces from a goal kick, from a transition. No one's being dynamic, which is what Bentancur was doing. He was able to progress the ball. No one's being dynamic in that aspect. And we know that Skip can do that. I'm not saying he's a great, like, fantastic player, and he's definitely not at Bentancur's level, but we've seen that Skip has the ability to be to carry the ball, and he's not doing that. Whether that's confidence in the back three in case he loses the ball, or that they just, he just doesn't feel like he can do that in this tactical setup, I don't know. But yeah, I just think we lack the quality to play that style. And if we're going to get a new manager who wants to play something different, that might benefit the players that already exist at the club. But either way, you just have to get rid of most of them anyways.
Yeah, I do agree with a lot of what you said there, Eddie. I do want to bring up two players in particular that I think have been like hard done by in your two's comments. I think Clement Longley had a very, 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 very good game on the weekend against Brighton. Defensively, especially, just I want to point out defensively, because he was excellent. Honestly, I think it's our best defensive performance out of someone who isn't Romero this season, from a defender. On the ball, slightly different story from Longley, but I personally believe that that is because of the players around him and the way that we have these automatisms that Conte set up. He either has to pass to Perisic, who we've previously mentioned is not good enough, is always in the wrong position when we're trying to play out at the back. Or Dier, who again dropped a generational stinker on the weekend, was awful. Or Lloris, who again we've mentioned can't play out at the back. And then Højbjerg on his side, who had probably his worst half of the season. I don't know how many times I'm going to say that on the podcast, but that first half, he was awful. So he has them four players to play the ball to. And then it just results in him probably taking a more risky ball into Son aerially, who's not going to win the ball. Or Kane, who in the first half felt like he was getting marked from both sides, fouled by Dunk from behind, and Caicedo was mopping up everything in front of him. So I think I want to give Longley a bit of the benefit of the doubt on when we're in possession of the ball, but out of possession, I thought he was really, really good. And Skip, similarly to Skip, I think Skip had to cover so much of Højbjerg's mistakes in the game And I think he really carried the ball well. There was about three occasions where it was just him running up the running up the field with the ball, like on his own. Perisic was nowhere to be seen because he's a 50-year-old man who has the, like, everyone was talking about how fit this guy was before the season. He can't play 90 minutes. He can't get up and down the pitch. He picks when he wants to get up and down the pitch, and he's never in the right position. Wherever he is, he could be up the pitch, he's in the wrong position. He could be, like, defensively, he'll be in the wrong position. He's awful. I've had enough of him. And Højbjerg didn't help out Skip at all in the game. And I think Skip's distribution is not limited, but it's not ever going to be a 60-yard ball, like, cross-field. But he is a tidy player, and there were some occasions where him, Kulusevski, Poro, and Romero linked up really well. And I honestly think Skip had a decent game.
I think, to be fair, I have been a bit harsh on Skip, because the times when I started to think that was because he was doing things to try and help the team, which he shouldn't have to do, where, like you say, he is the person on the break. There's no reason why Skip should basically be in the left wing position, and yet he was, because he's having to do so much. And yet, I think it's like the lack of quality ultimately that he does have, which makes me think, okay, you're a good player, and I don't mind him playing. Let me be clear, this is not like an agenda against Skip, but it's just one of those things where all of a sudden you kind of, what's the saying, the kind of, like, not the mist falls from your eyes, but something, the scales fall from your eyes, and you're like, okay, this was a young player who I was excited about. Maybe he's actually not as good. Maybe he's just not that good. Maybe his potential is just this. And I'm not saying he can't be a useful player. I think he probably will be going forward, possibly more as a squad player. Again, we need to see him in a three in midfield rather than this bastard two. But it's just that lack of quality, which is something I must say that I never experienced with Bentancur. And I know Bentancur is probably one of the best midfielders in the world, but that's kind of what we need if we want to kick on.
So
that was my point on Skip, really.
Yeah, I just want to make one last point on Skip. I think that he really, really, like, struggles with the lack of a centre attacker midfielder to link up his role in the team and the attack. Because we all know that Skip, as good as he is and as tidy as he is on the ball, he's never going to be that player to play a defence split and pass like five times a game. If he had like that very easy 10-yard ball or 15-yard ball into a centre attacking midfielder who could do that, who's not marked from both sides like Kane is every single game now, it would be a lot easier for him, and you'd see a lot more of his qualities in defence and tactically if we played that three in midfield. And I've been calling it for so long, and so is Cosmo, to be fair, and I think all of us on this podcast. I hate the two in midfield when we're playing three at the back, because, like Cosmo said, it paints this picture of a bleak defence and then a talented attack. It's like two separate parts of the game.
Yeah.
There's no synergy. There's no attacking as a team in it with this two in midfield, because the wing backs, as I'm not going to go on about Perisic again, but the wingbacks don't do what they need to do in this system in order for it to be an attacking team. It's an attacking three, and then the rest are just...
They're just defenders, really.
Yeah, they're just defending.
They're just there.
Yeah, they're just defending and hoofing the ball. And if we continue to play the ball out the back from a goal kick with Hugo Lloris in goal, I might gouge my eyes out. Genuinely, I might do it.
It is madness, isn't it? Because there's genuinely, there's no point, because they end up hoofing it anyway. And not just do they hoof it, they don't even look at where they're hoofing it. The amount of, like, chances we give away where they're kicking it on the half turn is just an absolute disaster. For what it's worth, I want to mention Poro, because I did see that he was splitting opinion a little bit. I think he's starting to show signs that he's going to be a good player. Doesn't always get it right, but he just looks like he has a bit of quality about him. And that's a distinction from liking the cut of his jib, by the way. That's a level up. That's where
he's graduated yeah. from cut of jib university.
I don't think he ever was cut of jib. I think cut of jib is for, that's more for someone like coming through the academy or some unknown guy. I think he's just got those flashes of quality, which maybe that's the European tax. I don't know. We can interrogate these cliches.
I think the most sorry Cosmo, were you going to say something else?
No, I was just gonna look to move on potentially.
Oh no, I think there's something tactically that we've kind of brushed over, and I don't want to give too much credit. So I think I know where you guys think. I think you know, guys know where I'm going with this. With once Delaney got sent off, and it did seem like Mason was in charge of what's going on. We did see some slight tactical changes. I'm not going to say that these were like game changing changes, which is it wasn't, but we talked about our disdain for the two in midfield, and that is also partly to do with the fact that Eric Dier can't really progress the ball that well. But when Eric Dier did join the midfield in sort of the second half of the second half, when we did kind of have that extra body in midfield, we looked way more comfortable. Not comfortable, it looked like it wasn't just chaos football from us. We had that extra body in midfield. Okay, it wasn't like quality, but it just gave us that extra bit of like bite that we had like because it's so easy to play around the midfield two. It's less easy to play around the midfield three or three bodies in that midfield. And so, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ryan Mason is the truth. And that we need to like follow him and into battle or whatever. But I thought it was just kind of interesting to see that change. And then obviously him having the wherewithal to, you know, just use the players that are on our bench.
Well, Alistair Gold did say that was from Stellini going to the press box and he was still calling the shots, apparently. I don't know about the tactical tweak that you mentioned, Eddie. I'm not sure on that. But definitely the substitution of Danjuma, that was by Stellini, apparently. And I have to say, I thought Danjuma showed everything that we've been missing within this Conte system in terms of where everyone's just been turned into an absolute robot. He came on and you could tell he was like basically playing for a move. And I thought the whole team just looked inspired by just his energy. And I genuinely don't think we scored that second goal without Danjuma on the pitch. And that's not just because he makes that run. I don't think Romero makes that tackle if he's not there, because he, it's like Sunday league football. Sometimes you just need someone to put a challenge in and then everyone gets up. And this is why I say we look like a team without a manager, because why are the laws of Sunday league football now affecting Tottenham's Premier League matches? This season is just, it's just too surreal to even deal with, man. I can't believe we've still got another 8 games.
Yeah,
God knows what's going to come.
I think it was in stark contrast to the sub that was made at Everton. Like, there's a way to go about enthusiasm on the pitch, and Danjuma showed every single inch of that enthusiasm that you need to show on the pitch. He felt like free from his shackles almost when he came on. Like, he looks like he's so depressed when he's warming up, and then he comes on and he looks so enthusiastic in the right way. Compared to what Lucas did at Everton, didn't even look like he was pressing, and then as soon as the ball is gone, he like snaps the guy's ankle. It's the complete opposite of what we've seen in like Lucas the last few years. And I just think if we don't give him a chance, I think it'll be a crime, because I really think that he could be an excellent squad player moving forward with a new manager, because I just see the enthusiasm. Even when he was on the ball, there was like a different quality to the way he was playing. I think Kulusevski had an off game, and I think Danjuma brought something different. And I really think it'd be a crime if he doesn't get the chance to show what he has for Spurs.
So is that you saying that you would want to sign him, or you just want to see more of a chance in these last few games?
Because
it's only 24 million euros, which really is not that much.
If he gets the chance in the next 10 games or 8 games or however many it is, I really wouldn't mind signing him if he gets the chance. If he doesn't get the chance, there's no point spending that amount of money because we haven't seen enough of him. It could just be like that new player burst where it is something different. Yeah. But I do want to see him at least get the chance to prove his worth to the team.
Yeah. Let's tackle Sonny's goal. It's taken until now to mention it. I think that was the first time I've like really celebrated a goal in ages. And I think it was a mix of just it being so good. I was so happy for Son. But then also I think during that period of the game, we were playing quite well. So yeah, I was just, yeah, delighted for him. And the fact that he did mention in that interview that part of why he hasn't been scoring those type of goals is because he's been forced in this Conte system to kind of play as like a sort of like a number 10 rather than being a winger that cuts in or even a striker. Yeah, I think it's a shame, but on 100 Premier League goals, first Asian player to do it, definitely one of my favourite Spurs players of all time. And I think next season, I think he'll be back. I think if we put in like a decent manager, then I think he'll be good, like in a front three of a 4-3-3 or something, or even a 4-2-3-1. I was worried that he just lost it, but now I'm fairly convinced it was just a tactical thing, to be honest.
He'd thrive under Zerbi, put it that way. He'd thrive under him. The way they played, he would
absolutely. The way they play, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. I think what Son said in the post-match interview, just like, kind of highlights just how much he's been suffering this season, because he even mentioned that tactically he wasn't getting into those positions. And it kind of like almost confirmed everyone's fears that like Perisic has really hampered his season, with the fact that with Perisic out wide so often, Son's having to come so narrow or so deep that he's just not in those attacking positions. Or when he is, he's being forced to get into the box, because Perisic is going to be in the back end rather than Son being on the back end. Like Glenn said, I think he thrives on the most other managers that are not going to force him to play as a 10, do you know what I mean? Which is basically what he has been playing as. Son's never been good, like really out wide or like really narrow, unless he's playing up front, which he's not. And so he's suffered a lot, and I think it just shows that, like, you know, you can write off a player, but it just maybe it's just a situation where, you know, he's not been allowed to get into the positions where you can thrive.
Such a damning indictment on Conte, the fact that like he was good when Conte hadn't had the chance to kind of get his tactical ideas across during last season, because he came in midway through the season. And then once he gets his hands on him and has a pre-season with him, he just completely destroys one of the best players in the Premier League last season. I think that's something to think about for some of the Conte fanboys, to be honest, because, you know, I had a lot of things against Conte. One of the things was how he treated the fans and how he spoke about the club in press conferences. That was the main thing. But also, just think the football was terrible. And I think he failed. This season, he just absolutely failed. And we're still dealing with the bin fire that he's created. I think someone like, you know, you guys said De Zerbi, I think under Slot, under Poch, under Ange, I think he'd be good. So, yeah, I think we will see Sonny back. Glenn, in the stadium, there are a lot of chants for Poch. What did you make of that?
I really don't like it now. Like, it's gone past the point of being like a joke about bring Poch back and all this sort of stuff. It's now becoming really serious that when we're 2-1 up against a European challenger, you're still singing for a manager who has not publicly registered any interest in the job. Like, multiple times during Poch's reign at Spurs, he publicly said that Manchester United and I think it was Real Madrid at the time were great clubs, and he'd love to manage them maybe one day. He's not said that about Spurs coming back. Like, we need to be very careful about wanting him in as a manager and putting off other candidates because we keep chanting his name. Like, it's really worrying. I really don't agree with it at all. And I think the people around me as well, actually seeing the game, have sort of outlined the people as, like, I don't want to name any Spurs fans as gammons, but it feels like a lot of the people chanting Poch's name in the stadium aren't actually bothered about the future of the club. They just anti-Levy.
They're just angry.
They're just angry, and they're anti-Levy under all circumstances. And chanting Poch's name is like almost a rebellious thing that they've come and done.
I can see that. It's interesting that you say that the gammons are supporting Poch, because I was always under the impression that they were kind of against him, to be honest, and that getting him back was like you loving Levy and loving failure. Because especially when I was at Milan away, and I was Conte out by Milan away, which was the first leg, and there were so many fans, what I would consider some of the like more gammon like fans, singing for Conte still, and I was just done with him. I didn't want to sing for him anymore. And then I joked with Louis about saying, oh, like, imagine starting up his magic, you know. I genuinely think if you did that, I think you would have got absolutely clobbered. So it's really interesting that you say that it's now swung towards the gammon side of things within the stadium.
I just think it's like really, really shallow thinking to chant his name where there are so many talented managers within the shout of getting the Spurs job, and it could genuinely put them off if they do hear that the Spurs fans just want Poch back. Because if it starts going wrong towards the start, who's to say that it doesn't happen to them? That's what I think it appears like to other managers.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually, and that's not something that I'd thought of. And the thing that you make about the point that you make about us being 2-1 up against the European rival is very interesting, actually, because we're still in with a shout. We're only 3 points off third. We do have a game in hand. we've got Bournemouth next.
And Rashford's out injured.
Yeah, so there is still a chance to get in the top four. I don't really see it happening, truth be told, but I mean, there's a chance.
Yeah, but if by some miracle we keep winning games, it doesn't matter how we perform, because we as you said, Cosmo, we're in this bin fire of post-Conte football. I just think it's about getting the points now. It's not about how we play under Stellini. If we manage to just keep getting 3 points and then start putting pressure on Newcastle and United, we've got a week where we have to play them both and Liverpool. That could be the week that turns our season. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not very hopeful, but it could be.
Eddie, Bournemouth at home on Saturday. It's got to be a win, right?
Well, it has to be a win. If it isn't a win, then I'd say that like sort of a fair indication of like where the season's going to head. Whether it's going to be a win is something else entirely. They're a bit of a weird side. They'll look good, weirdly play well, but then in terms of actually getting results, it goes like 50-50 down the middle. Like, sometimes I'll just get beat. Sometimes I'll get like a good result. So it's kind of how I felt about Nottingham Forest this season. Just kind of like a weird team, not entirely confident that we'll win, but we have the qualities too. And I just don't think it'll be anywhere like the game that we had earlier on this season with the 3-3. I just don't think, I don't think that they're in the position to play that expansively. I think it will be a situation where we will face a defensively sound team, and it's whether we can break that down or not. I just wish I was excited to find out Honestly, especially with last weekend and this coming weekend, I just want to know the result. I don't want to watch this play. I don't want to like get into tactical conversations. I don't want to like berate the team. I just want to get to the result. And then yeah, just see out the season, which is terrible, which is really, really terrible. I don't know.
The fact that there's still 8 games is nuts, because I don't think anyone's looking forward to them.
And I don't. That's Bournemouth. I can tell you now for a fact, I will actively avoid watching a Newcastle game. There's no way I'm watching that. I know Glenn's watching it. There's no way I'm watching that. I cannot wait to. I say I'm going to actively avoid it. I will probably watch it.
Yeah, of course you will.
I cannot wait to sit here when we're recording a podcast after your Newcastle game and have all my fears confirmed, because they look like a team that have a tactical approach. They look like a team that have a structure. Bro, players like Guimaraes are going to eat up our midfield.
Oh,
Isak's going to run dire ragged. I don't want to hear it. And the thing is, you just know someone like Dan Burn's going to absolutely keep Kulu quiet. He's going to keep our defense quiet. And again, Sven Botman and Fabian Scher, whoever we play against, they've been defensively brilliant this season. They've been horrible to watch, but they've been defensively so solid. So I just don't fancy us. But yeah, Bournemouth, it's got to be a win. So I think it might be.
The weird thing is that, like, obviously I'd said on the last podcast that I haven't really been paying as much attention to Spurs, but I actually watched the whole game of this one. And Glenn, when I bumped into you in Tesco the other day, I said I quite enjoyed it, but I think that's because I'm watching with like no expectations now. So just getting a win is just like, it's a serotonin hit. One. And I just enjoyed the drama of that. And I just enjoyed pissing off the whole of the Premier League with those decisions, because I think it was about time that we got some luck. But Glenn, you were very much on the opposite end of the spectrum. You were not happy.
Yeah, I think after the game, it like maybe now I'm feeling a bit like happier about like, oh, it's 3 points and us against everyone else sort of thing, like with the VAR decisions. But I didn't know about like whether the VAR decisions were right at the time or not. I thought Matoma dived. If I'm honest, like when I was like sort of watching, because it didn't look like a lot of contact. But tactically, we were just broken down by De Zerbi at a lot of points, and we were very reactive to his like sort of ideas, and that worried me a lot. But then now I'm sort of thinking, look, we haven't really got a permanent manager. We haven't really got like a director of football. We haven't got a direction at the moment. That has like something has to go well for Spurs soon, like, because at the moment it can't get worse. It can't get worse.
As Mick McCarthy said, it can. Right, yeah. Look forward to a Gary O'Neill masterclass next week. So,
yeah.
as always, if you made it this far, thank you for listening. I've been Cosmo, and I've been joined by Eddie and Glenn.
Thank you.